When I was about 12 or 13, I went shopping with my mother and a friend of hers, along with my younger brother. As we entered the store, my mother and her friend kind of splintered off and went to do their shopping, while my brother and I went the other direction so that we could look at toys and games and things that kids look at. At one point, I noticed that my brother was shoving a handheld video game in his pocket, and I asked him, "What are you doing?" And he told me he was taking the game and that he had done similar things before and never got caught. Well, as misguided as this was, he convinced me that it was safe. And I'm ashamed to admit that I took a couple of cassette tape singles. I shoved them in my purse. Well, before long, we noticed a man following us through the store. It kind of creeped us out, but in our cluelessness, we didn't connect the fact that we had just put merchandise out of sight with the intention of not paying for it. The guy wasn't wearing a uniform either, so we were kind of just dumb kids, I guess. Well, before long, we met up with my mother and her friend and went through the checkout lane. My brother and I looked at each other as we passed through, feeling a kind of weird kind of vindication when the checkout lady didn't seem to notice us. Then later, as we walked out the doors of the store, we both got kind of excited and we kind of thought we'd gotten away with something. We were almost to the car when the man who had been following us through the store came up and grabbed us by the shoulders. As you can imagine, my mother kind of freaked out and rushed over to us to find out what was going on. Who was this person talking to us? And of course, was horrified to find out that he was taking us in for stealing. He was a plainclothes security guard. After several hours of hell and a sign promised to never return to that store, they released us to my mother and we rode home in silence. As we arrived home, my mother asked us for the story. Why had we done this? What possessed us to do it? Well, I tried to explain that my brother had suggested it, and I'm pretty sure he even agreed to the truth, but my mother couldn't stand the idea that it might have been her golden child's idea. He was the youngest, and like I mentioned, the golden child, so as the scapegoat, I must have been the problem, she decided. And after a brief admonishment to never listen to me or my crazy ideas again, she sent my brother to his room. I, on the other hand, was severely physically punished and emotionally battered to the point that still to this day, when I'm walking through a store, I feel the need to keep my hands visible at all times. Today, QueenBeeing.com, we're going to talk about scapegoating and exactly why and how it happens, plus what you can do if you've been the scapegoat so you can start the healing process. So let's get started. What is a scapegoat? Well, also known as the black sheep, the scapegoat is the person in the toxic family structure who's always blamed for everything that goes wrong, well, for everyone in the family. They are the black sheep. It's the person who's usually considered the outcast, the bad kid, or a straight-up disgrace to the family. A scapegoat might have the following traits. They're empathic. They're strong-willed. They internalize blame easily. They are emotionally reactive. They are highly sensitive. They are protective and even overprotective of friends, strangers, and other people in the world. They are often the caregiver of the family, and they're likely to question everything, including authority, which adds to their pain in the family, if you can imagine. And of course, they seem to be different somehow or sort of stick out from the rest of the family in some way. What is the toxic family structure? Well, generally, toxic family structure includes the narcissist or the toxic person that the family revolves around. This also includes the enabler, the other parent a lot of times, who might willingly or unwillingly support the narcissist or toxic person. Then there's the golden child, the child who gets all the positive attention and who often, in their own way, lives with extreme pressure from both the parents who want them to succeed or to be perfect, as well as the siblings who feel jealous or slighted by this attention, so opposite of the attention they get. The scapegoat, the problem child, the one everybody blames everything for, like I said, and the lost child, the invisible one who doesn't get in much trouble, who is largely ignored due to the attention the golden child gets and the direct abuse of the scapegoat. Of course, there are other possibilities in this mix. You might have a peacemaker, a comedian, and so on, a clown, whatever label you want to put on them, but this is the basic structure that we're going to work with for today, all right? So let's talk about what scapegoating is. Scapegoating is what we call it when someone chooses a person or group of people and sort of blames them for any and everything that happens. Then they treat that person or that group unfairly and they punish them unfairly for all these perceived slights or evil wrongdoings, etc. This can be done by one person or a whole bunch of people, groups of people. Now, the term scapegoating is actually mentioned in the Bible as well as in other ancient texts in which ancient tribal societies would choose an actual goat from their flock to represent the tribe's collective sins. They'd sacrifice the goat in one way or another, and then the tribe's collective sins would be forgiven, and they would have essentially a clean slate. Pretty interesting, right? Kind of feels familiar, doesn't it? Well, how does this fit into the dysfunctional family, and how does the dysfunctional family choose the scapegoat? There are a couple of things to consider here. In some families, the role of the scapegoat seems like it sort of rotates between everyone who isn't the center of the world or the narcissist or toxic person in the mix. For example, I know of one toxic mother who has two sons. At any given moment, one of the sons is in her good graces, so to speak, while the other's being scapegoated. The issue is that each son sort of does time in each role. The family jokes that she can't be friends with both of them at the same time, but in reality, they're minimizing her toxicity and her level of dysfunction as they make these jokes. Of course, both of these boys grew up to be men who had a ton of self-doubt and who each married rather controlling women who could potentially be labeled as narcissists. But the rotating scapegoat role is actually far less damaging than the role of the permanent scapegoat, in which one single person in the family is the ongoing target for the toxic person in the family. It is this person who is blamed for everything that goes wrong, the scapegoat of the permanent nature. And it is this person whose accomplishments are ignored and minimized. It's this person who's never good enough and who knows this, knows it, doesn't think it, knows it, based on how they're treated. And nothing they do is ever considered real or enough. And they know that too. Now, when the golden child does something wrong, the toxic parent finds a way to blame it on the scapegoat. Why do they do this? Well, on a subconscious level, the broken scapegoat type allows the rest of the family to feel like they're well-adjusted and emotionally balanced. Isn't that nice of them? The family can tell everyone about the scapegoat and how terrible they are. And people are going to feel sorry for them and in some cases, even praise them for putting up with such a problem child. The toxic parent can then tell the whole world and even herself about how perfect she is in her parental role. And anything that makes her unhappy or makes her feel bad about herself in any way can absolutely be blamed on the scapegoat child. See how that works? Of course, chances are that the toxic parent doesn't recognize this consciously. She isn't actively thinking that she's trying to use the scapegoat in this way. And yet most of the time, she still actively bullies and targets the scapegoated child over the course of years and even decades. In many cases. Sadly, this can often lead to the other siblings following suit and victimizing the scapegoated child well into adulthood, and even after the toxic parent dies in some cases. It becomes their truth, so to speak, and they often unintentionally see the scapegoat as the bad kid, as the one who just refused to be happy or the one who complained about things that weren't really happening because they had a different experience than the scapegoat child. This means that the toxic parent keeps her proverbial nose clean because anything that goes wrong or is perceived as a failure for her is absolutely blamed on guess who? The scapegoat. Now, how does this affect a scapegoated child exactly? What happens as they get older? Well, this depends on a couple of different factors. First, the other parent. If the other parent doesn't join in on the blame game and putting down of the scapegoat, they may end up actively supporting or even validating the scapegoat at times. Imagine. Or if the scapegoat receives external validation from a grandparent, a teacher, or another trusted adult, they might actually manage to recognize what is happening eventually and work on their own healing. In my case, I was lucky because I had a Girl Scout leader and a bunch of my teachers over the years who validated me, and I was able to recognize eventually exactly what was happening. In the long run, this made my healing so much easier. Of course, the other side of the coin is the child who believes everything the toxic people say to him or her and sort of takes it into themselves and almost becomes exactly what the toxic parent claimed that they were in the first place, like a self-fulfilling prophecy, kind of. This often means that that child doesn't ever take credit when they succeed, and when something good happens, they think it must be a mistake or luck or a fluke. And then when something bad happens, well, of course, they assume it's because they're not good enough, they're bad, they're broken somehow, or that they caused it to happen in some way. I personally can also relate to this side of that coin because even though part of me thought it was wrong, the other part of me believed, at least the part about not being good enough or capable of being a real person. I never really felt like a real person until I was about 35 years old. And in both cases, most people who are scapegoated as children become really good at putting up walls and keeping people at a distance. They may also develop what we call a thick skin, meaning that they don't take things personally, or at least they don't end up being rattled by rude comments as much or disrespectful treatment in the same way as a healthier person might be. Of course, in some cases, they take it way too seriously and internalize it, and it becomes painful. They almost always feel like they don't belong or like they're not an important part of the family. And this often follows them well into adulthood. Like I said, I was 35 before I figured it all out. They might be focused on achieving big things in order to prove their critical toxic parent wrong, or they might just totally give up and sort of fall into the role that she casts for them. Alternatively, they might set very low standards for themselves in order to reduce the pressure they felt growing up, and they might struggle to set and accomplish goals at all. In all cases, there are serious emotional and psychological issues at play for a scapegoat. There is, of course, one possible positive to all of this, and that is that the scapegoated one is the one who is most likely to recognize that there is a problem in the family. Maybe the family is dysfunctional. And that child is also most likely to get help as an adult to overcome it and possibly to break the cycle of abuse in their own family as an adult. In fact, of all the roles in the toxic family, the scapegoat is most likely to actually have a chance to develop and maintain healthier relationships overall. So that's something, I guess. But when this healing isn't realized early enough, it also opens the scapegoat up for toxic relationships with narcissists and other cluster Bs as they navigate adulthood, because they just sort of take what they can get, if that makes any sense at all. We can talk more about that in a future video. If you are a scapegoat or a former scapegoat, the first step to healing is to recognize the issue and to recognize that it wasn't your fault, that you weren't the total train wreck that your parent claimed you were, and that you are worthy of love and respect, just like everyone else. Once you get this logically, you will be able to separate the emotional and psychological garbage you've been fed and the facts so that you can begin to heal properly. Ultimately, I want you to know that you are good enough, that you are a real person, and that you do deserve good things in life. Look at me. I mean it. Don't forget. Anywho, this brings me to the question of the day. And the question of the day is, did you grow up in a toxic family? And if so, what role do you think that you played? Share your thoughts, share your ideas, share your experiences in the comment section below. And let's talk about it. By the way, are you interested in more videos on the toxic family structure and how to heal from it? If you are, leave me a comment below and let me know so I can make more videos for you. And in the meantime, check out this playlist that I previously made about the toxic family structure. As always, thank you so much for being a part of my day and a part of my life. And hey, thanks for letting me be a part of yours. It really does mean a lot to me. Now, before I go, make sure you take a look at the videos I'm leaving for you here and there. And while you're here, hit that subscribe button so we can stay connected and continue on this healing journey together. I'll see you soon.